You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
I am now joined on the line with Sally Stockwell, who is coming on to talk about her new record, Little Triggers. Sally, you're coming to us live from Ototahi. How are you doing and what's happening? What's good in Ototahi right now?
Hi, Zach. Kia ora. Well, the sun is out and it's just so beautiful. It's one of those days where it's still and sunny and it's warm and it feels like summer's already here.
Lovely.
I just love that. It puts me in such a good mood.
Yeah, that's good, eh? That's good. Are you quite a seasonally affected person?
I think I am, but I'm learning to embrace all the seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah, yeah. I see there's a keyboard behind you. Are you jamming on that this morning?
No, I would like to be jamming on that much more, but to be honest, TBH, the admin with the album is pretty high, so I spend an awful lot of time on my computer instead, listening to my music, not making new music currently.
Well, that's how it is, eh? That's the nature of the beast, I guess.
Yeah.
I want to start out with kind of an obscure little curveball here. I saw in an interview that one of your first live performances was in 1992 as a dancer for the Freemasons' 100th centennial at the Christchurch Town Hall. I want to know three things. Were there swords? Were the Freemasons getting lit? And how did you land that gig?
Okay, so the first two, no, unfortunately, no swords.
No swords.
Yeah, they did not. I know, but I did wear a pair of knee-high white marching boots.
Wow.
And I was in a unitard, which was half red and half white. Maybe that's a Freemason's colours, I don't know.
Could be.
And all we wore white gloves with these big round circular mirrors attached to the palms of the gloves where we positioned our hands in quite dramatic positions and bounced off laser lights that were sent from around, the lighting box, around the auditorium to create the most bedazzling laser experience.
Oh, man, was this a rave?
I don't know. I have no idea what it was all about. And I landed it just through my dance teacher, Sandy Gray, who just sort of said, oh, who wants to do a dance show with a little bit of acting? And because I hadn't done any acting and I really wanted to do some, I put my hand up and said, yeah, I'll do it. And they paid us a little bit, so it was my first paid gig. And I turned up to several rehearsals and went through all the, you know, it was quite weird, actually.
It would be, yeah, yeah. The Freemasons are, I mean, they're pretty innocent. I think it's just like a weird relic, you know. It's a vestige of old European times and kind of a bit of an old man's club, as far as I can tell.
A bit culty, I think.
But, yeah, a little bit culty vibes. They have, like, funny handshakes and stuff, eh?
Yeah.
You're not only a musician, but you're also an actor of stage and screen. And not only are you an actor of stage and screen, but you're also an acting and singing voice coach. I really want to know what the usual predicaments people have when they come to you wanting to improve their speech. Like, how do you teach someone to get around a stutter?
Oh, okay. So I guess that's two questions you've asked because the stutter is very specific. Mm. I haven't had any stutterers.
Oh, okay. So I thought that would be the main type of people. Okay.
No, I have all kinds of people come to me. A lot of people will come. They'll come. Often they might have a particular, like a speech. They might have a wedding speech and they want to work on that. I've had lawyers come to me who want to strengthen their vocal, you know, articulation and their kind of confidence with the way they present themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people come to me who do have really specific issues with the way they speak, or it might be post-operative care that they're preferring to come to me over, you know, the physiotherapists that they've been working with for their voice. Yeah, there are just so many different ways that people are seeking their vocal. Some people are on a journey. They'd like to really kind of dig in and get into aspects of their voice which they've never touched on, and they might have a very kind of limited voice that they know they have, or it might be more around confidence that they're wanting to have more public speaking skills or that kind of thing. And I have people coming to me for singing as well. So singing is another whole ball game. Sometimes people have had, often people have had really debilitating or an injuring experience at a young age and they have stopped singing for the rest of their life, which I think is always so it just breaks my heart, because I think that everybody has a singing voice, and that it's a birthright to be able to sing. Mm-hmm. And we're taught from such an early age across singing and the speaking world to just shut down. You know, we're so often told to be quiet, to stop expressing that real inner, you know, true self that wants to just express.
Yeah. Totally.
And so a lot of my work is about just undoing that and learning to play, learning the fundamentals of voice work. And I go everywhere between singing and speaking.
Wow. I bet that covers a whole lot of fields, from like elements of psychology and so on and so forth. It's a pretty holistic field, it seems like.
It is. I really enjoy it. And it borders on, I mean, it is a kind of therapy. I'm not a trained therapist, but I do think that the arts, you know, the arts serve that anyway, so it's kind of a merging point where I just offer what I know and what I can do.
Well, speaking of therapy, this new album, Little Triggers, is, I think, pretty therapeutic for you, because you're voicing a lot of feelings about pretty intense topics here. In particular, I want to touch on motherhood. Now, while motherhood is certainly an inherently traumatic experience, because there's so much, you know, risk to your physical and mental health, your mobility, autonomy, and freedom, there's so much that can be mitigated by sharing the load of domestic labour and child rearing. Do you think that situation, that dynamic, is getting better in Aotearoa, New Zealand?
I haven't got any statistics at hand, or I haven't really been overviewing statistics to be able to comment on that, you know, from a factual point of view. But from my point of view, I think it's a tricky one. Mm. From my personal position, my husband and I really try and share that workload, but we still come back to discussions which I am driving around the invisible workload that I think women carry.
Yeah.
And so much of that is about the detail, and a lot of it is about the social expectation that we're born into, and that society, through a patriarchal system, mm-hmm. male lens, just kind of grooms men and women to expect women to do that role, and to do many roles, and to do it in a way that is that's acceptable, which tends to be along the lines of being graceful and being capable and being strong and not complaining and not questioning. So it's tricky, because, you know, in some ways I don't think that has changed very much at all, and in other ways perhaps it has in those individual relationships. So I can't really speak for people I don't know. But I certainly know that I've had plenty of discussions throughout the 10 years of being a mother where the women I know are just struggling, because we feel that there is just always a sense of overwhelm and a constant juggle that is impossible to reach a balance point. I think that's the same. That goes for parents across the board, though, too, especially in today's society, because we've lost the village. We've lost this this age-old village that, you know, for centuries was around, which spread the workload across not just the two caregivers or the parents, but the greater family would be around to pass the baby to, or to babysit, you know. So, you know, I've done most of my parenting years in Auckland, where I didn't have any family, and so we had to pay for all that care, which just changes the dynamic. The premise of it is very different. You're on your own, and the chips are down.
Yeah.
And so that's I've veered a little bit away from the question.
No, this is great.
Yeah.
It actually.
Yeah.
The reality of what you're talking about with, you know, the way women are socialized to be able to do everything, especially mothers, and handle them all with grace, reminds me of the track, which I'll play after our kororo here, The Loving Subordinate, which, you know, to me epitomizes the ethos of this record surrounding the trials, tribulations and trauma of motherhood and womanhood in general. And with your repeated line at the end, doing it all with grace really, you know, gets through to you. With that line in the track's general vibe, yeah, you're kind of, you know, you're echoing that sentiment that you have to keep putting on a brave face continually, day in and day out.
Yeah, I think so. And even having done this work, it's a real test of whether people actually want to have this discussion or not. I think that, you know, there are people listening who don't feed back to me that it's great to hear these things being talked about. But when I do, it confirms that these things need to be talked about. You know, it's kind of like that chicken and egg, or it's like a cycle feeding itself, that if we don't talk about the things that are not being spoken about and are hard to articulate and give it a go, then the status quo stays the same. And, you know, in that song I sing prior to that, "Can you see me smiling? See all my teeth now." And it's like, you know, in some ways we're smiling away, gritting our teeth. But how much has changed? I mean, I read some of the lyrics in that song came from some research and reading I was doing around two sisters, Emily, I've forgotten the other sister's name, Nagalski, who wrote a book called Burnout. And that's very much about, they talk about the loving subordinate, which is sort of like the umbrella role of what women fall into, this societal role of always being loving, happy, gentle, all these positive virtues, but it negates so much of the greater underbelly of a true emotional landscape that we have and true conflicts that we have, because so much of motherhood, I feel, is about tension. It's about the tension of having to make difficult decisions, you know, between two things, where to be at one time or where to give our attention. And so often we don't give ourselves the self-care that we need so that we can actually be a better person. And so we become depleted. And that's what they talk about in this burnout. You know, we wonder why we're so exhausted and we can't pull ourselves together. It's because we're afraid to give ourselves anything or too much of a good thing, because, well, A, it takes us away from the family, and B, we might be judged for being selfish or greedy or indulgent.
Mm.
You know, it's like really hard to push against some of those age-old bullshit concepts that I think the women are still supposed to do. Or if we're going to be successful, then we must do those. We must be those qualities as well. You know, you can't just be. You can't be. It's very difficult for women to be assertive without being labelled as aggressive. Whereas it's very common for a man to be assertive and for that to be admired.
Yes.
You know, there are these double standards with which women are judged for wanting to have it all, or wanting to have a career and be a good mother. You know, it's often something's got to give. The reality, I think, is something's got to give. If you're looking at a woman and she's doing amazingly in one area of her life and she's a mum, you've got to wonder what's kind of failing, or not failing, or what's struggling in one in another unseen area, because it's very, I actually believe it's near impossible to do it all and to do it all well. You know, like even the work of this album, my family have gone without me so many times for me to be able to do the work, and the irony is I'm doing it to try and push the face of motherhood, yet my own mothering is taking the back seat for quite a long time.
That's really fascinating what you just said. I really want to touch on kind of more of the structural elements of what you're saying on the record, and with the track "We've Got So Much to Talk About." It's a pretty next level track, featuring this repeated guitar phrase and distant vocals of you saying "We've got so much to talk about," all the while you're delivering kind of a free spirited sang rant against patriarchy, amongst a lot of other things. I want to know, we're in the 9-year process of creating Little Triggers. Did this track originate?
I watched a Netflix doco series narrated and, what do you call it, fronted by a woman who was a doctor, and I think she might be an historian. It's no longer on Netflix. It's called The Ascent of Women, and it's a four-part series of about an hour and a half each episode. And it tracked the history of women throughout civilization and the kind of governance of them by male patriarchal society, or the plight of women for their emancipation or freedom within civilization. Mm-hmm. It's a balance between those two. And it was incredible. It went right back to Mesopotamia. Actually, it went even before then. It went right back to the very first village that they dug up, where they discovered that the families lived. They didn't even almost have families. They were interfamilies.
Yeah.
But people were buried together from outside of their families. And it pointed to, you know, this idea of this greater village, you know, raising the child. But so it went through all of the different periods of civilization throughout the world. And it was astonishing to me. Also throughout the advent of agriculture and militarization and marriage, of course, and how property, the women being property and being the commercial value in the rise of success for anything, for empires or whatever, or in marriages. So yeah, that kind of inspired me to write it. But I came out the back of that and thought, I just cannot articulate what I have just experienced and learned, except for in a freestyle rant, stream of consciousness. So I just wrote it. I wrote it all in one go, and then I looked at that poem and thought, well, I don't even know how to edit that because everything is important to me by the time I got it down. And so I put down a baseline, which is what is currently there, and I came up with the backing or the single chant. We've got so much to talk about. And then I just laid down a track of me delivering the lyrics as I felt. And pretty much, I remember going back and listening, because it's 7 minutes long,
yeah.
And realizing, I have to learn that. I have to learn it exactly as I did it. And so that's what I did, because it wasn't, because often I find that the first take in anything where the impulse is fresh and true is the best.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So I went back and learned it, and that's become the song.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I agree about the first take thing. That seems to be a consensus from a lot of creative people who I've talked to on the program so far. You know, if you do that live, how will you approach doing that song live?
I do it live, and I do it with my looper, because I think the interesting...
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I think that the song has lots of opportunity for vocal dynamic, but
yes,
to do that, I need to be on tools. So I have like it's a Boss RC-505, which is like a DJ's hand looper. It's not a foot pedal. There are about five banks on it. I only need about two or three. And I work across those, and I lay down. So on the track, on the loop track, there is just the bass guitar.
Yeah.
And then lay down the backing of me singing, We've Got So Much to Talk About.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then I'll lay that with harmonies or whatever. And then I just deliver the I'll just call it a rant. I deliver the rant, but I have lots of different effects, which I use, like phases or distortion or reverb or... not that much. Only about three effects that I use.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to the end and I have a repeat phrase, which is, Can I Influence You, Brother? And then there's another one, To Give Love. And both those phrases, I build them up with harmonies, and I let them just kind of, I let it kind of become a cacophony or a wall of sound.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the intent of the song is actually to become overwhelming.
Yeah.
And that's why at the end of the song, in the album, I came up with it's a pretty rough idea, but which is just to have the sound of a record being ripped off. So the song ends quite abruptly on the album of that, you know, scratchy needle being dragged across a record as it gets pulled off, because I'd had enough of the song myself. I don't expect everyone to listen to that song all the way through. It's a real wild card, that song. I was know whether I put it on or I don't. And then I thought, no, I'll be true to the process. I'm all about process.
I think what I'm most impressed with is, I don't know, how you really touch into some weird places with your voice on that track. It's quite remarkable. I would do an example here, but I would be doing a massive injustice to your song. thank you so much for coming on the program today, Sally. I do want to know, will you be embarking on a tour, perhaps coming to Otipoti to play some little triggers?
I would love to come to Otipoti. I will be looking at that in the new year, once I have defrazzled a bit.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to looking at the live music and what that'll be, and then getting on the road somehow in some kind of outfit. I'm not sure whether it'll be just myself or up to three other people. I'm not sure. Lots to plan.
You could dust off those boots, get those mirror gloves, that unitard out of the closet.
Yeah, you said it. Great idea, Zach.
Thank you very much. Alrighty, thank you so much for coming on the program today, Sally. It was great chatting with you.
Pleasure.
Thank you. All right, folks, that was Sally Stockwell. We're talking about their new album, Little Triggers, which is out, available now. We're going to play The Loving Subordinate from that track, which always makes me feel very emotional. So here it is, The Loving Subordinate by Sally Stockwell. You're listening to The One. Keep it locked.
They tell me everything is possible. All I hear, extend a little.
A Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.